From KTOO, I'm Katie Anastas with a look at local and statewide news. Juneau voters will likely see just one bond proposal on the October ballot, one that would pay for a new city hall. Last year, Juneau voters agreed to loan the city money for parks and recreation projects, but not a new city hall. This year, the Juneau Assembly plans to only ask for city hall funding. At a finance committee meeting Wednesday night, Assemblymember Greg Smith floated the idea of a $2 million bond for the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. The track inside the fieldhouse isn't wheelchair accessible. Advocates have asked the city to build an elevator.
We realize there's an ADA issue, the turf needs replacement, there's some energy efficiency issues there.
But member Wade Bryson said putting a second, smaller bond on the ballot would draw support away from the city hall bond.
If we bring another bond forward, we will get the exact same results that we received last time. Oh, we can vote for a small bond to do a few things and skip the big one.
Mayor Beth Weldon agreed. She said it was too late in the assembly's budget process to come up with another bond proposal.
I think having another bond on this ballot would just muddy the waters for a very important vote that we need to have for City Hall.
The Assembly will vote next month on whether to put the $27 million City Hall bond on the October ballot. Members of the public can comment at the July 10th meeting. Biologists announced this year's first casualty of a wild bird to avian influenza last month. As KYUK's Emily Schwing reports, the announcement comes after a frenzied year of tracking the virus among wild birds across the state.
Avian influenza first appeared in Alaska last year, and it was rough. The virus claimed the life of a brown bear cub at a state recreation site on Kodiak. A second brown bear cub in southeast Alaska was also infected. Last year, the virus killed more than 1,000 domestic poultry in the Matanuska-Susitna Valley, and it slowed shipments of eggs from Washington State. Now scientists are trying to figure out how the bird flu fared in Alaska over the winter.
People have understood that avian influenza viruses can remain viable or infectious in cold water for long periods of time, for many years now.
Andy Ramey is a research geneticist with the USGS Alaska Science Center. He's also the director of the Molecular Ecology Laboratory.
In Minnesota and Alaska, in our initial experiments, we found that viruses seem to remain infectious for more than 7 months.
In those experiments, birds were exposed to infected water samples that were kept cold in a lab. Scientists also tested the virus in the field to find out more about the effects of cold winter temperatures.
In another experiment conducted only in Alaska, we left some of these vials in wetlands for more than a year. And a year later, some small proportion of the viruses were still viable.
Federal data shows a total of 232 recorded cases among wild birds in Alaska since last April. So far this spring, at least one wild bird on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta was found dead from the virus. Hunters who've been out along Alaska's west coast and further inland on the Delta this season say they haven't seen anything out of the ordinary. In recent months, the USDA has reported fewer avian influenza infections among wild birds across North America compared to the same time period last year. Andy Ramey says that could be tied to an increase in immunity among wild birds. But he says vigilance is key and that anyone who notices a sick or dead wild bird should still report it.
We're in some ways some uncharted water here. As you know, historically, this didn't happen. We didn't have highly pathogenic viruses in wild birds. So our experience in this scenario is pretty limited.
According to Ramey, scientists started looking for avian influenza in North America in the 1990s. But it didn't show up on the continent until 2014. For 2 years, the virus persisted. It appeared again in 2021.
Since late 2021, we've had roughly 3,000 detections in wild birds in the United States. So this is like nothing we've ever seen. And now in this current outbreak, we're seeing numerous, I'd say many wild birds die on account of highly pathogenic avian influenza infection.
Ramey likens the outbreak among wild birds to the wildlife equivalent of the coronavirus pandemic humans have endured for the last 3 years. In Bethel, I'm Emily Schwing.
It's been nearly 2 weeks since state fisheries managers announced they'd be closing the Yukon River to salmon fishing in early June. This week, state fisheries biologists and troopers flew to communities on the YK Delta to talk about the closures and enforcement. As KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports, some of the meetings were contentious.
Hi, everyone. I think we're going to get started because we've got to be over in a moment.
Inside Hooper Bay's Tribal Council building, nearly 50 people gathered to hear from the state on why officials decided to close Chinook salmon fishing in the coastal area from the Nascanaw Peninsula up to Point Romanoff. That closure includes Hooper and Scammon Bays, Chivac, Emonic, Kotluk, Nunamiqua, and Alakanuk. The state says the closure is intended to protect Chinook salmon while they migrate upriver to spawns in Alaska and Canada. But most in this crowd are subsistence fishermen, and fishing means survival.
It's like taking away the food off our table.
Alaska Wildlife Trooper Sergeant Walter Blajewski set up the meeting. He says he wanted to give the community an opportunity to ask questions they might have on both fishing opportunities and restrictions. The group included a fish and game biologist, too.
Our goal was just that, to be available to answer questions and to provide maybe some explanation as to why restrictions were going to be occurring. And I think we accomplished that.
Non-salmon fishing will still be permitted during the closures, but with restrictions. Gill nets limited to 4-inch or smaller mesh and 60 feet or less in length. These nets must be operated as a set net near shore. Blajewski says troopers can't enforce these regulations all the time. They do it when weather and time permits.
We don't often get to the coastal villages, but when we do, we usually go there, for the day. And those type of enforcement patrols are usually conducted, on shore, in the village, walking around the village, because we just don't have the resources to get out there.
But Blajewski warns anyone caught violating the regulations will be fined. The maximum fine is $500, but there's wiggle room. Blajewski says they also don't normally seize the fish either.
And if we do seize fish, we would donate those fish to qualified charities such as elders or people in need in the region.
Dina Jallin works for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She is currently the Yukon River Summer Season Manager. Jallin says they asked a lot of questions about commercial fishing in the area that sometimes catches the same fish subsistence users are supposed to avoid. What makes Hooper Bay different from others is that it's a coastal community.
In previous years, the coastal area has not been closed. They've had restrictions to 6-inch mesh, but they've typically been left open. They do catch some kings and summer chum as they migrate up along the coast of the Yukon River. So unfortunately, when there's no harvestable surplus, we do feel the need to close that district as well to reduce, to hopefully reduce the harvest of king salmon as they travel up along the coast.
Jallin says she was happy to see the turnout as well as the level of participation.
A lot of the people express their frustrations, and that's also what we hear a lot of the time, and it's very understandable that people are very frustrated with the salmon and with the management actions in recent years.
Fisheries managers say they could loosen restrictions if the run is stronger than they're projecting. But right now, Jallin says every district of the Yukon is going to be closed to king salmon. Based on salmon run timing, those closures will work their way up through the entire Yukon area, through all the districts and all the tributaries.
We know these management actions are we're very intensively managing subsistence. We know it's incredibly frustrating, but we're only taking these actions because the runs are so low that there's no fish available for harvestable surplus.
And that frustration was palpable. Jan Olson is the tribal administrator for the native village of Hooper Bay.
A lot of the community members that were attending after the meeting thought that, they really didn't get any answers.
Community members say they need access to their subsistence foods. Olson says there's still confusion as to why they are being regulated. They need a fish to survive.
We're not in it for the money. We are in it to put fish in our freezers for future use.
Remnants of Typhoon Murbach last fall caused major flooding in Hooper Bay. Families were displaced, homes were lost, and the community relied on state assistance as well as donations of fish.
We're not bad people. We just want to fish, and, it's just we want the fish that we're accustomed to.
Olson, along with several other members of the community, say these restrictions will certainly make for a more challenging winter. They don't make enough to buy more groceries. In Hooper Bay, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.